professional journalistic demeanor bled away.
Just a minute ago,
she was opening up all the corrals. I have it all recorded. Where did she go? He pointed to the side of the exhibition hall. The corrals went all the way around. Natua, it would seem, was bent on opening them all. Jaina shoved Tyr away, simultaneously sending a pulse to short out the hovering cam droid, and reaching for her comlink. Mom, Natua was just out here about a minute ago. She's heading around the north side of the exhibition hall.
That explains something,
Leia said in a dry voice.
Looks like I've been chasing shadows. I'm on my way.
How about an exclusive interview, since my information proved useful? Tyr said.
How about I don't punch you in the nose?
Jaina retorted. She was already turned around and running toward the exhibition hall, calming Rad as she went. She found the Feline at the Bordok pen. Jaina didn't slow her speed, didn't cry out as she charged, merely dived toward the other Jedi. Natua, however, sensed her approach, and right as Jaina leapt toward her, she opened the pen, and the maddened animal stampeded out. Unable to move aside in time, Jaina simply force leapt upward, ran lightly across the backs of the creatures, and sprang toward Natua. The other Jedi had her lightsaber up, and the two blades clashed, sizzling. Jaina gritted her teeth and hissed over the noise.
I don't want to hurt you.
But I want to hurt you. The real Jaina will thank me.
Natua broke the lock and pushed. Jaina fell back a pace and dropped into a defense position.
Stang.
She really didn't want to hurt Natua. The other Jedi was troubled and needed to be taken care of. She was...
Oh, now the gloves come off.
Jaina hissed angrily, realizing that Natua was trying to influence her with pheromones.
Nice trick, Natua, came Leia's voice. You led me on a merry chase there for a little bit. Jason was able to throw his voice like that, too. Don't suppose you'd care to tell me how you did it?
Jaina didn't take her eyes off Natua, but said,
About time you got here.
Sorry, Leia said. Natua did a pretty good job of misdirecting me.
Surrender,
Rad said, hurrying up.
You are outnumbered 3-1, Natua. You know we are only concerned about your...
Natua lunged at Jaina, snarling. Both Solos brought their blades down on hers in perfect tandem, as if they'd rehearsed it. The sheer physical pressure of two crossed blades on her single one forced Natua's blade toward the ground as she stumbled, caught off balance. It was then that Rad sprang on her. There was no grace, no finesse, no skilled usage of the Force in his attack. He simply jumped on her from behind and rammed his hard skull into hers. Natua crumpled, unconscious, to the ground. Jaina and Leia blinked at Rad. He shrugged, a little embarrassed.
Hey, Jaina said. It did the trick.
She wiped a hand across her forehead and sniffed.
Phew, is that me? I need a Santa steam.
She glanced up to see a familiar figure striding toward her.
Looks like I missed all the fun. Again, Han said.
Alana was walking at his side, her hand held tightly in his. She looked pale and frightened still, but was clearly recovering. Leia looked sorrowfully at the unconscious Feline and sighed.
This keeps getting harder to witness, she said. Valen, Seth, Gisela, and now Natua. All so young to have something like this happen.
Guess they don't make Jedi like they used to,
said Han.
Dad, I'm right here.
Chapter 19 Aboard the Jade Shadow.
The days passed, and Luke and Ben learned. They learned primarily from Tadar Roe, whom they grew increasingly to like. Even though he was Ang-Ti, and therefore would in part always be incomprehensible to them, he was clearly comfortable in his dealings with the two Jedi, and seemed to like them after a fashion. He answered their questions as best he could, which sometimes was very well indeed, and sometimes hardly at all. He was clearly trying.
You are the third and fourth humans I have met,
Tadar Roe said one day as they sat in what was clearly the Ang-Ti's favorite spot. It seemed as rocky and barren as any other place, but the stones had been worn down by time. They held the warmth of the sun when it was cool, and moved into shade from the taller standing stones when the day grew warmer. Ben even caught glimpses of small animals now and then. There was a calmness, a serenity about the place that both he and Luke could sense. Luke even commented on it one afternoon. Tadar Roe radiated pleasure and warmth into the Force as he responded.
This is a teaching site. Many of the young gather here to learn. So too did Jason Solo and George Cardass.
Always the Yang-Ti used the full names of those he referred to.
School, then? Ben asked.
Yes, that will do. A school. For centuries have open and willing minds been taught in this place. We find joy in learning and in sharing knowledge. The energy of so many minds, so much learning and enlightenment. That is what you feel here.
Ben nodded slowly.
You taught Jason here, Luke said. How good a student was he?
He was only the second human I had ever met, and the first Jedi. He seemed very eager for knowledge, but it was not as joyful to him as to others. Is this a human trait?
Luke and Ben exchanged glances. Not universally. Everyone is a unique individual. How long ago was Jason here?
There was a newness, an expectancy about him,
Tadar Roe said, in typical cryptic Yang-Ti fashion. By now, though, Luke and Ben were starting to be able to translate.
He was just starting on the 5-year journey, Luke said to Ben, who nodded.
You said he seemed eager for knowledge, but it wasn't a joyful experience, Ben continued. Can you elaborate?
Tadar Roe sat back on his haunches, his tongues flickering in and out, but no words came forth. Clearly thinking and speaking were sometimes one and the same for the Yang-Ti. Ben stifled an inappropriate laugh as he realized that sometimes thinking and speaking were one for members of his family as well.
It was a task rather than a delight, as if it was something to be accomplished, so one would not need to worry about it anymore. Something to get, to have.
That sounds like Jason, Ben said quietly. So even then his feet were set on this path. At least somewhat.
Path?
Luke sighed and turned to Tadar Roe.
Your people use the Force, but it is my understanding that you don't believe in a light or dark side.
They had learned this from Georges Cardass's journals. At the beginning, Cardass had seemed to be very much like them. He had not been at all certain of what to make of the Yang-Ti initially.
I didn't really understand what it was Yoda had done for me until I frittered the gift away,
the small image of Cardass had said.
I wasn't and am not, and probably never will be, a Force-sensitive individual. And frankly, before I came here, I really didn't care that much about it. But the Yang-Ti do, and yet they barely use it. Never have I seen a people so fascinated with something they respect enough not to use like a common household implement.
We don't do that,
Ben had said as they watched over dinner one night.
No, Luke had replied. That denotes a lack of respect, I think.
Most of my understanding about the Force, which is admittedly limited, points to it having only two aspects, light and dark,
Cardass had said.
The Jedi work with the light side of the Force, and the Sith and Dark Jedi with, obviously, the dark. That's nice and simple and clear, and maybe we humans like our philosophies that way. But the Yang-Ti have a much more complicated view of it. They view it as...
The image of Georges Cardass had paused, and his hands moved, as if he could physically grasp the words he wanted.
As having variations, gradations, like light when put through a prism. Kind of a rainbow.
Ben thought of this image as Tadar Roe nodded.
It is true. We do use the Force. It is sacred. It is of those who dwell beyond the veil. Such a thing is much more complex than light or dark, wrong or right. Jason Solo seemed to understand this.
Luke and Ben exchanged glances. Ben knew that look. They'd talk about this more when they were done.
We do use the Force to power our vessels, so that we may move beyond this world and search for any objects that might have belonged to those who dwell beyond the veil. We will send you on such pilgrimages as well. You will be able to aid us greatly.
Of course, said Luke carefully. We will be happy to do so while we are here. You shared with Jason your understanding of the Force, of this rainbow aspect, as Cardass called it. What else did you teach him?
Jason Solo was very strong in the Force, which is why we agreed to instruct him. We believe that he had been sent to us to learn, just as George Cardass was, just as you were. We taught him that one does not need to be Force-sensitive to use the Force. We taught him the understanding of how our vessels move instantly from place to place, how even as simple a thing as a rock or a tool can be moved so.
He extended a clawed hand and pointed at a small stone. There was a clap of displaced air, and suddenly the rock was at Luke's feet. Both Ben and Luke started.
Perception is all, if it is powerful enough. I saw the rock here and not there, and here it is. It is difficult to convince the mind that it is so, but once you have mastered and understood that, it is supremely simple.
This, Ben thought to himself, was totally astral. He bent and picked up the rock. It was just that, a rock. Not smoking, not unnaturally warm or cool, just a rock. That had been there a minute ago, but was now here, resting in his palm.
Jason Solo was able to learn this quickly.
Tadar Roe continued.
I will teach this to the both of you. Hopefully your minds will grasp it as quickly as Jason Solo did.
And flow walking? Ben said. How did he take to that?
Easily as well. It is tied in with how we view the Force, and how...
The Yang-Ti ducked his head in an odd gesture. Consternation emanated from him.
How until the coming of this prophet, we viewed destiny and fate. We believe the Force guides us, and we do not try to direct it in any particular manner. It is the same with flow walking. One must surrender one's emotions to the Force, center oneself in its flow.
He turned his head and fixed Ben with one great liquid black eye.
Perhaps you will be like your cousin, and learn it very quickly.
Perhaps, Ben said, uncomfortable with the notion that he might be like Jason in any way. And still, he couldn't suppress a twinge of excitement at being able to go back into the past or into the future, even an uncertain, not really sure it's going to happen future. Out of the corner of his eye, as if his father could read his thoughts, Ben saw Luke frown. They listened to more of Cardass's holographic recording over dinner that night.
They use the Force to power their vessels somehow, to make those crazy jumps that seem as much luck as anything else,
the little hologram continued.
And they discuss it endlessly. At least Tadar Roe seems to want to discuss it with me.
And Tadar Roe wanted to discuss it with Luke and Ben, and presumably Jason as well. It was odd. They were the most secretive people imaginable, even hostile about it. Yet once they had accepted one into their ranks, as it were, they wanted to share everything.
The Force is a rainbow, Ben said. I gotta say, it's a nice image.
It is, Luke agreed. I don't like to think of myself as close-minded, Ben, or intolerant. And I am fully prepared to admit that viewing the Force this way seems to work for the Yang-Ti. Ben thought about the time he had spent on Zyost. At that point in his life, he had been solidly Jason's creature, although a few doubts had begun to creep in around the edges. He had believed that the Force was a tool, like a lightsaber or a blaster, that it was what you did with it, how you manipulated it, that was important. That there was no real dark or light side, only a neutral side, gray, if you will. Or rainbow. And yet, even as he first saw the planet, he had felt something malevolent about it. As if it was watching him, the way he was watching it. He remembered the voices, which spoke first in his dreams and then in his head, urging him to abandon the young girl who was accompanying him, to kill her, to eat her, in order to grow strong. And when those thoughts were on him, the girl, Kyra, recoiled from him, from the dark side growing within him. And it was at that moment that Ben had wondered about his belief in the Force's neutrality. The malevolence he had sensed had come from nothing alive. It was the imprint of the Sith who had been there for so long, the echoes of their presence, their energy.
even though they had long since physically left the world. He realized that it was the dark side, and although it had taken him a long time to process that revelation, he had.
"I used to think of it like a tool, a weapon," he said. "A blaster isn't inherently evil. It can shoot a friend to betray him or an enemy to save a life. I thought of the Force that way, as neither good or evil, just kind of gray."
Luke nodded. "I remember when I entered the cave on Dagobah. I sensed something wrong at once, even before I went in. It was so cold, so unsettling. I was..." He laughed slightly. "I was setting myself up for failure is what I was doing. Yoda told me I wouldn't need my weapons, but I took them anyway. He warned me that a Jedi uses the Force for knowledge and defense, never attack. But when the image of Vader approached, I activated my lightsaber first. That's not what Jedi do. We protect and defend those who can't defend themselves. So I failed my first test on the whole light side, dark side thing pretty miserably."
Ben chuckled.
"You know, it gives me hope that you screwed up so badly and so consistently as a kid, Dad."
"Watch it, son," Luke grinned.
I think Jason wanted it to be gray," Ben said slowly, speaking as he worked things out in his head.
"What do you mean?"
Ben suspected that Luke knew exactly what he meant, but wanted to hear him say it. He continued.
"Jason wanted a safe galaxy. That's something all right-thinking people want. A safe place to raise their kids, pursue their art or their passions. It's not a bad ideal."
"No, it's not."
"But Jason wanted it too badly. Badly enough to do really evil things to get it. Badly enough to become Sith in order to get the power to make it happen."
"It's the classic example of the end justifying the means," Luke said quietly. "You want something, even something that everyone agrees is a good thing, too desperately. And so you start eliminating obstacles to your success. And then, in order to keep going, you've got to harden yourself to doing more and more things that are at odds with your core beliefs of what is right and wrong. Make it so that your goal is so important, you have to lie, or betray, or kill for it."
Luke paused.
"I once asked Yoda if the dark side was stronger. He said no, but it was easier, more..."
"Seductive?"
Ben said in his smoothest Lando Calrissian impression, as he waggled his eyebrows suggestively. Luke laughed.
"You know the story. But the lesson, which I failed miserably, was that you really do find only what you take with you. The dark side can't corrupt you unless you let it. Let it use the anger, hatred, and aggression you already have."
"Or your wants,"
Ben said quietly, the humor fading.
"That's what Jason did."
"For a Jedi, there is no place for a rainbow force," Luke said quietly. "There's no room for compromise. We walk the path of the light side, or we fall to the darkness. There's no gray area, Ben."
Ben sighed.
"It sounds like a nice idea, but... yeah, I saw what happened to Jason, up close and personal. And I felt the dark side on Zyost, just like you did on Dagobah. But Yoda was wrong about one thing."
"Oh? What's that?"
"It didn't dominate Vader's destiny. You pulled him back from the dark side, and when he died, he was one with the Force. And you pulled Mom back from it, too."
Luke smiled gently. "And Leia pulled me back, when I got too close. I think you did the same thing for Tahiri, Ben. You didn't just abandon her, even when she had done all the things she did to you."
Ben struck a heroic pose as best he could in the flowform chair.
"Jedi Skywalkers," he said melodramatically, "practicing a fine family tradition of rescuing people from the dark side."
"Hey, there are worse family traditions.
Like Aunt Leia's spice loaf."
"You think the dark side is scary? You say that to her."
"I won't. I like my body intact, thank you very much."
The journeys upon which the Ang-Ti sent Luke and Ben were fascinating. The Ang-Ti sometimes knew the precise location where an artifact would be. Other times, Luke and Ben were sent on missions based only on a sensing that something might be there. Traveling was much easier now that they had the Yang-T to help them plot jumps. Ben once asked if they could learn how to make the Jade Shadow jump the way the Sanhedrin vessels did, as they were now on a pilgrimage on behalf of the Yang-T. Tadar Ro shook his head.
Your vessel is without the Force. Ours are not.
Are they organic, then?
Luke asked, thinking of the Yuuzhan Vong. Tadar Ro cocked his head, considering.
Yes and no. They are of the Force, but they are not organic. Not as you understand the word.
More rainbow philosophy? Asked Ben.
Indeed.
The question could have been perceived as flippant, but Luke and apparently Tadar Ro both knew that it wasn't intended as such.
Things are not just one thing or another, not with us.
The artifacts they were sent to find were of all varieties. Sometimes they seemed to Luke and Ben to simply be exceptionally beautiful stones, crystals, or other natural formations. Other times, they carefully brought back what was clearly a piece of advanced alien technology. Each time, the item was received in the same manner, with reverence. And most of the time, Luke and Ben, the ones who managed to obtain the item, were treated with gratitude and courtesy. Most of the time. Increasingly, though, Luke began to sense resentment from the Yang-T. He asked Tadar Ro about it one afternoon. Tadar Ro seemed agitated.
It is not directed at you. The schism between the two factions, those who believe the Force guides us while not directly shaping things, and those who believe the Prophet was a voice from those who dwell beyond the veil, increases each day. More and more, each side swells with those who step from neutrality, from being comfortable with the not-knowing, to a firm stance. Fewer and fewer are staying open to all possibilities, as I am. We need to heal this rift, and soon.
What can we do to help? Luke asked.
When you are ready, we will take you to the Embrace.
Beside Luke, Ben started violently at the word. Luke reached to squeeze his arm reassuringly. For Ben, for a long while yet, the word embrace would be followed by of pain, and would produce an instant visceral reaction. Tadar Ro, of course, picked up on it.
It is nothing of harm. It is simply our term for the site that contains the relics, that embraces them lovingly, holds them safely.
Ben was calming down and nodded.
Sorry, he said. So I can't Dad and I go to this embrace and try to answer that question for you?
You are not yet ready to do such a thing,
Tadar Ro replied.
There are still things you must learn, things you must understand about us, things that Jason Solo and George Cardass learned and understood, at least to some degree. Then I will lead you into the embrace.
Luke knew what Tadar Ro was talking about. He was not at all happy that Ben had asked to learn flow walking, or that Tadar Ro had agreed to teach it. For beings who had a multifaceted approach to the Force, even to physics itself, flow walking was probably not that big a deal. But for humans, it was something else entirely. Still, the situation was what it was. I know Ben is anxious to learn flow walking from you, so I will leave you two to it, he said, rising and nodding respectfully at Tadar Ro. Ben didn't meet his father's eyes, instead gazed straight at the Yang-T. He was still looking intently at him as Luke turned and walked back to the Jade Shadow. The shadows of evening were stretching out when Ben finally came back. He was excited by what he had learned, but was doing what he could to conceal that excitement. He was silent as he rattled around in the galley for a bit, finally emerging with a plate piled high with food.
I'm a little later than usual, he said. I figured you'd already eaten.
Luke nodded and turned to pause the holographic journal entry he'd been perusing.
I did. How's it going?
Ben filled his mouth with food so he wouldn't have to reply instantly.
Okay,
he said finally, then took another large bite. Luke sighed.
Care to elaborate?
Not really. I mean, I know you don't like it, Dad, so what's the point?
I think it'd be interesting to hear how it's being taught from the original source, Luke said, keeping his voice mild. Ben shrugged.
Kind of what you'd expect from the Ankh-T. All rainbowy.
Luke felt a pang of sorrow at the new wariness his son displayed. He knew that it was a direct consequence of his disapproval. But what was he to do? What was any father to do when he saw his son doing something that was unnecessary and perhaps very dangerous? He couldn't just pretend that it was all fine, and Ben knew it. And for the first time on this journey together, Luke could feel the old rift between them opening again. He took a deep breath. Ben, do you understand why I don't approve of this?
Of course I do, Ben said, snapping a little. You believe it's dangerous, that it'll hurt me somehow, that it's wrong to try to meddle with the past or future.
I do believe it will hurt you, but not the way you think, Luke said, searching for the words. Ben eyed him, still wary but also curious. Luke took a moment to gather the words, hoping they were the right ones. It's an empty promise, Ben, full of hopes and wishes, but in the end, it's just ashes and disillusionment. Yes, you can see those who have died, but you can't change what happens to them. And yes, you can see the future, even alter it to a small degree if you're skilled enough, but you can't be sure you're doing the right thing. The very wanting that is prompting you to do this is what started many down the path to the dark side.
What do you know about what I want? Ben snapped. You never even asked why I wanted to do it.
Luke blinked, realizing his son was right. I'm sorry, he said. I assumed.
You shouldn't.
You're right. I shouldn't make assumptions. I thought you wanted to go back in time to see Mom again, or to find out when Jason started to go wrong, so that you might be able to change things. A sudden bright flush on his son's cheeks told Luke that he had hit the mark. The silence that suddenly descended was painfully awkward. Luke waited a moment, but Ben said nothing, didn't even continue to eat. Ben, I'm just a father wanting to spare his son pain, that's all. And I knew that's why you wanted to learn the technique, because, well, because it's what I would have wanted to do at your age.
I'm sick of being my age, Ben said coldly.
He shoved the food away from him with a sharp, violent gesture and rose.
I guess I'm not hungry after all.
Luke watched him stalk off toward his cabin, his heart aching. Everything he had said was true, but in the state Ben was in, he couldn't or wouldn't listen. He would have to figure all this out on his own. And Luke would be there when he did.
Chapter 20. Office of the Chief of State, Senate Building, Coruscant.
Desha Lor gasped, and her hand flew to her mouth. Wynn Dorvan stood, hands loosely clasped behind his back, his face inscrutable, as he, Desha, and Dalla watched the shocking events unfolding on the Hollow News. They were in Dalla's office, the decor of which was crisply white and scrupulously clean. Dalla was a meticulous and precise woman, and of the Empire, and both these attributes of hers were on display here to anyone who cared to look.
It's madness, absolute chaos,
Javis Tyr was saying, peering earnestly into the cam.
Whereas only a short while ago, the Coruscant Livestock Exchange and Exhibition was a safe, fun-filled way to while away an afternoon, now it has become a site of carnage and terror.
Dalla's face was strained, her green eyes fastened on the unfolding events. This was not the first time news had revolved around something as seemingly innocuous as the exchange and exhibition. Plenty of times in the past, a creature or two, or three or four, had broken loose to stampede about for a while before it was brought down by crack security teams. Or sometimes the less than savory dealings unofficially conducted in back rooms went awry. But even Dorvan was surprised to see this.
I received the call a few moments ago and took the liberty of sending out some special teams from the GA, he said to Dalla, who nodded absently, her gaze still riveted. The cam pulled back to show the main floor as Tyr continued to narrate.
What you're seeing are empty corrals that should be filled with herd animals. Someone has deliberately sabotaged the gates and set dozens of creatures loose to stampede among the populace. The source of it.
The cam moved so suddenly, Dorvan felt a hint of nausea, and then he saw why. A feline, her skin reddened as she exuded hormones, was bringing a lightsaber down upon another gate, this one containing Rontos. The animals, skittish in urban areas under the best of circumstances, were terrified, rearing and snorting. As they dived for freedom, the Jedi, for it could only be a Jedi, leapt clear, then darted away.
A Jedi? Said Desha, disbelieving. But a Jedi would never put civilians in harm's way like this.
These days they would, Dala said grimly, her lips pressed together in a thin, furious line. And have.
It's a Jedi,
Javis Tyr was crying, echoing their words.
Another Jedi sworn to protect has clearly gone insane. Who knows how many innocents will die here, terrorized, trampled, or gored to death. When will this stop?
The cam swung around to a close-up of the back of a woman's head. Her hair was long, dark, and pulled back in a ponytail. Suddenly, the woman turned.
You! That's Jaina Solo,
Deshalor said, her eyes wide as the Jedi strode up to the cam and covered it with her hand.
What's she doing there?
She, her parents, and her adopted sister were attending the exhibition, Dorvan said. When Desha stared at him, he answered her unspoken question. While we do not exactly follow her or other notable personages around, the GA does take care to know exactly where such personages are at all times. You'll soon learn about this, and I'll be putting you in charge of such operations. The Twi'lek looked uncomfortable with the idea, but said nothing. Meanwhile, despite the vibroblades Jaina was metaphorically shooting at him, Tyr wasn't giving up. He continued to speak.
Jaina Solo, can you verify that Jedi Natua won?
Dorvan tuned out the rest, instead listening to a message from his earpiece comlink. He turned to Dala.
Admiral, there's worse going on in the dangerous animal hall. I have reports of injuries and a possible fatality.
Oh, no!
Desha looked stunned and shocked, and again Dorvan wondered if anyone could really be this innocent. Dorvan directed his gaze back to the holonews. Javis Tyr had moved away from covering the current crisis. Apparently he had switched to a second holocam. The image was not as clear as before. Dorvan was willing to bet a month's wages that Jaina had damaged it somehow. The fact that Tyr had a backup cam indicated that this sort of thing must happen a lot to a holo journalist.
Exclusive footage. Natua Wan's murderous rampage is not the first example of a Jedi harming the public, nor is it likely to be the last. And yet the Jedi continue to operate without restrictions. While Valen and Gisela Horn are safely encased in carbonite, Natua Wan is still on the loose. And so, we thought was another rogue Jedi, Seth Helen.
What he saw next shocked even Win Dorvan. It was Seth Helen, captured, raging at nothing, and then collapsing on a comfortable-looking flow-form couch. The cam pulled back to reveal what looked like a pleasant apartment, complete with tables and chairs and what appeared to be a state-of-the-art holographic center.
What you're seeing is footage from deep inside the Jedi Temple. Seth Helen, murderer, has apparently been captured by the Jedi and held in a prison that looks like a luxury apartment.
Admiral, did you know about... Dorvan turned. Dala was livid. Her face was white with anger, a vein pulsed in her forehead, and she looked as if she were about to snap the data pad in half. It was obvious she was exercising every ounce of her formidable control.
I take it you didn't, he said mildly, turning back to the news broadcast.
Another figure had come into view, blocking the cam for a moment. Then it moved out of the way and turned to look back at Helen. Jaina Solo. The scene cut back to Javis Tyr, looking directly into the cam as if into the viewer's eyes.
When I encountered Jedi Solo a few moments ago, I gave her an opportunity to explain the situation with Helen, but she refused to grant me an interview. I can only conclude that everything surrounding this criminal has been done on the sly. Shame on you, Jaina Solo. Shame on the Jedi. You have done nothing to redeem yourself in the eyes of the public with this action. And Admiral Natasi Dalla, you are the leader of the Galactic Alliance. You were appointed such with every hope that you would keep us safe. And yet, right under your nose, the Jedi are smuggling prisoners to safety and lying about it to you. Or are they lying to you? Admiral, you owe us an explanation for your abandonment of...
Dalla shut it off. Admiral, my advice would be for you not to be overly hasty. Reports do indicate that Leia and Jaina Solo were able to...
Shut up, Dorvan. Prep Security Team Alpha and get me Kenth Hamner now.
Master's Council, Jedi Temple, Coruscant.
The emergency meeting of the Jedi Masters was in an uproar. Only a few had been able to attend in person. Most were simply appearing via hologram. The result was that often one party was unaware another was attempting to speak, and they stepped on one another's words.
"Is absolutely what Jedi should be doing," Corran Horn was saying. "Dalla snatched every other one from us without so much as a by your leave and stuck them in carbonite. It's about time we had one of our own. And if Han, Leia, and Jaina can get Wan to us, we'll have another."
"While I admit that I'm glad we have Helen, and hopefully now Wan, not least because that means they're no longer in a place where they can harm innocents, we should have been informed of his capture," Kyle Katarn chimed in. "Who knew about this?"
Hamner rubbed his temples.
"Obviously Jedi Solo," he said dryly. "Who else?"
"I did, though not until after the fact," said Silgal.
Hamner shot her a startled glance.
"Master Silgal," he said, "why did you not bring this to the Master's Council?"
The Mon Calamari did not seem in the least abashed.
"Your job is a difficult one at present, and no one wished to add further complications to it. You are an honorable man, Master Hamner. No one wished for you to have to choose between supporting your order and lying to Admiral Dalla. It was simply easier this way."
Hamner closed his eyes briefly. He'd expected that Jaina would take the words he had spoken to her exactly as she had. He'd expected that she would understand his tacit instruction.
"Go ahead and do what you need to do, but leave the order officially out of it."
Wasn't this, as Horn had said, exactly what Jedi were supposed to do? How could they figure out what was wrong with these young Jedi if they weren't allowed to study and interact with them? The Order was responsible for Jedi actions. They should be permitted to retain the Jedi who had exhibited such distressing behavior.
"It was certainly easier when none of this was public," he said acerbically. "Now I'm afraid this incident with that reporter has forced my hand. Dalla has already contacted my offices. I have delayed speaking with her, but my sources tell me there is a security team en route to demand the release of both Seph Helen and, when she arrives, Natua Wan. I can't see how I can refuse the Chief of State."
The shouting began in earnest. No one wanted to hand over Helen or Wan. Some took up Hamner's position, perhaps feeling a slight sting at not having been included in the plotting. Others insisted that it was time for the Jedi to stand firm against the bullying the GA had been imposing. Hamner's comlink beeped. It was Jedi Leia Solo. He flicked it on and listened while the uproar raged about and without him.
"Sir, request permission to speak with you immediately. I'd like to bring Jaina as well. I know the situation is... challenging, but with your permission, I'd like to run a possible solution by you."
"Jedi Solo," Hamner said quietly, "if you have anything in the neighborhood of a solution to this dilemma, I will most happily listen to it."
"Thank you, sir. We're just arriving with Jedi Wan. Once we get her safely into the Med Center, we'll meet you in the Room of 1,000 Fountains."
"I would welcome the serenity,"
he said, and clicked off the comlink. Dalla had contacted Javis Tyr and every other reporter she could think of. By the time she, Dorvan, and her security team had arrived at the temple, there was quite a throng of the press crowding the steps. She had taken a few moments to get her anger under control. While ultimately her desire was to be able to finally, completely control the Jedi, she had always thought she'd played fair with them. To find out about this deception was insulting and infuriating. She wanted more than simply having the two rogue Jedi handed over to her. She wanted to see the Jedi humiliated, as they had humiliated her. Jabba's Tear's special report stung.
"You shouldn't let him get to you like that, ma'am," said Dorvan as they drove up.
"If anyone else had said that to me, Dorvan," Dalla said quietly, "firing would be the least of their worries."
He absently petted Pocket.
"I'm well aware of that, ma'am. I am also aware that you know I'm right."
Dalla gave a noncommittal grunt, but continued to compose herself. A free press had its advantages and disadvantages, and she intended to make use of this particular weapon. Hamner had asked to meet with her in private. She had refused, instead insisting on a public meeting at the very top of the steps of the temple. Eventually, they would retire somewhere and speak, of course. But before then, she wanted to shake the Jedi up just a bit more. The night blue personnel transport speeder she had arranged for was already there. And upon her vehicle's arrival, the sides of the transport, large swing-out doors, opened wide. Two full squadrons of men and women in the instantly recognizable blue of galactic security, well, blue except for their black riot body armor, poured out. Each was armed with a blaster rifle, but thus far the weapons were not lifted. The threat was all Dalla wanted. They marched in solid formation up the steps. The beings standing there were equally solemn in their stance. Kenth Hamner, calm, tall, not a hair out of place, Silgal standing quietly, Octoramus, Saba Sebatine, her eyes unnervingly unblinking, and three people Dalla did not expect to see, what was left of the Solo family. Han, as was to be expected in situations like this, looked like he wanted to blast someone or something. Leia, a master politician, and one Dalla could not help but respect, looked calm and composed. Jaina, her father's daughter, looked more like Han than Leia right now. Bright spots of color were in her cheeks, but she stood straight without fidgeting. Dalla took her time ascending the steps, and then nodded to each of them in turn, and briefly introduced Dorvan.
"I'd really hoped there would be no need for this sort of thing again," she said, knowing that every word was being recorded.
"I share that sentiment, Admiral," said Hamner. "Shall we retire to discuss the situation?"
"Lead the way." Chapter 21 Jedi Temple, Coruscant.
Dalla was vaguely amused that the meeting took place in the gardens of the Tower of Reconciliation. Despite the short notice, somehow a small table had been prepared, and delicacies and calf provided. The air was redolent with pleasing, calming scents, and quiet music was being played somewhere. It was all rather transparent. If the Jedi expected to move her by such pleasantries, they were sorely mistaken. She and Dorvan sat down. Dalla refused sweet cakes, but accepted calf. Once it was poured and the attendants had left them in private, she got right to the point.
"You can't tell me, Master Hamner, that you didn't know about this," Dalla said.
"I can, and what is more, it is the truth,"
Hamner replied calmly.
"I was unaware of anything any of the Jedi Knights or the Masters were doing along these lines. Admiral, you yourself specifically requested that I step in during Master Skywalker's absence. That is because you knew you could trust me to not deceive you, and that I have not done."
"I will admit that I and a few others have," Leia said quietly. "I believed and still believe it is in the best interests of everyone involved, in the interests of the Jedi, those poor unfortunates who are suffering from this malady, and in the interests of the Galactic Alliance, that the Jedi who have exhibited this behavior be kept conscious and studied by others like them. With all due respect, we can sense things that your doctors cannot. This is exactly the issue I raised with Skywalker," Dalla retorted. "Judge, jury, executioner, Jedi. The rest of us just have to trust that you have our best interests at heart. Leia, beings are getting seriously harmed, even killed by this malady, as you so delicately put it. and I can't simply rely on the Jedi to police themselves.
Actually, you can, put in Jaina, and Leia winced just a little. Because I did. Master Hamner is completely innocent in this. He knew nothing. I made sure he didn't. I acted on my own initiative.
Alone? Said Dala sarcastically. That would be quite the trick, even for the Sword of the Jedi.
Jaina scowled. She, too, was thinking of the news coverage.
Obviously not.
Then name your accomplices.
Dala took a sip of calf. It was delicious, robust and hot. The Jedi obviously didn't skimp.
I can't do that.
Dala sighed, placed the calf down, leaned back in her chair, and folded her arms.
Then we're back to square one. I demand the release of Natua Wan and Seth Helen as criminals against the Galactic Alliance. You will hand them over to me, and...
You have two, they have two,
Han said. He didn't use we. He was not a Jedi, and the word choice was very clear.
You may not like it, Dala, and frankly, much of the time I don't like it either. I've had to live with it for over 40 years, that extra sensing thing they have. But it's saved my life more than once, and I've learned to trust it.
You trust it because you trust the individuals,
Dala said.
I've got no reason to trust you, less now.
Jaina blew a lock of hair out of her eyes. Her mother spoke before she could.
We are all acutely aware of that, and that's one thing that Master Hamner, Han, Jaina, and I have discussed.
Jaina Solo knew that what she was doing was contrary to what I had instructed the Order, Hamner said. I have not been able to extract from her the name of her compatriots, only her assurance, which I believe, that none of them other than Jedi Solo, Master Silgal, and one other are from the Order. Jaina understands that she is to be reprimanded for what she chose to do.
Dala bit back a retort, and instead lifted an eyebrow.
I'm listening,
she said. Beside her, Dorvan entered Data quietly, his calf cooled, untouched in front of him.
She will be confined to the temple for a period of 2 weeks. The same punishment will be enacted upon the other Jedi. Even Master Silgal will be subjected to this, for her decision not to come forward immediately.
I'm impressed,
Dala said, and she was. This was a step toward the humiliation she desired to see them experience.
Will this be made public?
Jaina winced.
Yes,
said Hamner.
And I'm prepared to talk with any reporters of your choosing.
As am I and Jaina, said Leia. And you'll hand over Helen and Wan,
said Dala.
No,
said Leia, quietly but firmly.
As we said before, we have ways of helping them, of understanding them that you don't have access to. And as Han rather bluntly but aptly put it, you have two, we have two. I can have you arrested, Dala said.
Yeah, you can do that. But you know it's going to start looking uncomfortably like the old Empire if you do,
said Han.
First Luke, then Kenth, whom you asked for by name. And isn't that the kind of thing that got you so ticked with Jason?
Dala's lips pressed together so tightly they almost disappeared. She took another sip of the calf, buying time to compose her thoughts. She would not lose control. Finally, she set her cup down and looked at them all evenly in turn.
Here is what will happen. My people will have access to the prisoners at any hour, day or night. All your findings will be turned over to them. The other mysterious Jedi involved will be named immediately after this meeting. Hamner, Leia, Jaina Silgal, and said Jedi to be named will be interviewed by Javis Tyr, live, unedited, with the Jedi Temple in the background. You will all formally apologize for the actions you have taken, or, she said, eyeing Hamner, the actions you let slip by on your watch.
I don't think... Jaina began.
Obviously,
snapped Dala.
Let me put it this way. If you do not agree to all these stipulations to the letter, then I have no qualms about conjuring up images of the old Empire and taking the prisoners who rightfully should be incarcerated right out of your temple. And there are more GA security members than there are Jedi.
Leia, Han, Hamner, and Jaina exchanged glances.
Agreed,
said Hamner quietly, and he held out his hand.
What? Yelped Jaina, as soon as Dala had exited. You want me to sit for an interview with that bottom feeder? You want me to turn in...
Jedi Solo,
said Hamner, his voice and face both hard as ice.
Whatever tacit approval you had or thought you had from me before you started this little adventure, you knew full well that you would be forced to take responsibility for your actions if they ever came to light.
We have Juan and we have Seth, Leia said, reaching across the table to squeeze her daughter's hand. That's what you performed the mission in order to accomplish. Dala's letting us keep them, if not our pride.
Han muttered something and Leia elbowed him.
Your mom's right. We won this round and Dala knows it.
Hamner rubbed his eyes tiredly.
I could wish that no one involved was thinking about winning rounds at all. What's important is that we find a way to help these poor Jedi and keep them and others safe.
Say that to Javis Tyr just as you said it here, and you'll have a chance to make Dala's so-called punishment work for us, Leia said. And I, too, wish we weren't on sides, but we are for right now, and we simply have to deal with it the best we can.
Ma'am, said Dorvan as they were escorted out of the room and walked the long, imposing hallway toward the entrance where the reporters hovered. I've taken the liberty of drafting a statement for you to read. There's a way you can turn this all to the GA's advantage. Dala threw him a disbelieving glance, but quickly skimmed the statement on his datapad. She was impressed. All the facts were there, but the word choice, the order in which they were presented, and the conclusion that would be drawn from it all certainly gave the impression that all was right in the Galactic Alliance.
Quinn, what would I do without you?
I rather think you'd miss Pocket.
Still, Dala mused as she stepped out in the throng of reporters and now gawkers, she had not gotten what she wanted. The Jedi had wriggled out from under this yet again. A thought began to form in the back of her mind. If she couldn't have the Jedi where she wanted them, she might settle for the next best thing. She smiled, stepped up to the makeshift podium, and began to speak.
Moth Lesserson's private residence, Coruscant.
Vanson, said Lesserson, speaking into his calm. Are you watching HNE?
I am, and I must say it's absolutely riveting programming.
It was, without a doubt, Javis Tyr's day. First the coverage of the insane Jedi rampage, then the expose of the fact that the Jedi had another crazed knight stashed away in the bowels of their temple. And now the coup de grace, an exclusive interview with no lesser personages than acting Grandmaster Kent Hamner, Master Silgal, a Chandra Fon Jedi named Tekli, and both living Jedi Solos.
I understand he has his own show now. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets bumped to prime time after this.
Indeed, said Lesserson.
Leia Solo was speaking now, looking directly and sincerely into the holocam, doing her best to smooth over the bluntness of her offspring.
He is a resourceful one, isn't he? He could prove very useful.
Jaina Solo's quarters, Jedi Temple, Coruscant.
The reporters finally drifted away at twilight, after the interviews had all been conducted and the temple had resumed what looked to them like its normal, boring routine. The curious onlookers had begun to drift away in search of other distractions. Jaina was exhausted and furious. What part of her day had not been spent swallowing her pride had passed in basic hard labor. All part of Kent's punishment for doing something he had known criffing good and well, she... Jaina stuffed that emotion down. He'd been right. Once this came to light, she'd known she'd be forced to own her actions and take the proper punishment for disobedience. So she had not uttered a word of complaint as she helped out in the laundry and the cafeteria, along with apprentices and staff members.
Now all she wanted to do was get to her quarters and fall into the blessed unconsciousness of sleep. She was therefore surprised to open the door to her room and find Jag Fel waiting for her. The room's lighting was dim, and the table that was normally covered with data pads, flimsy, and various assorted knick-knacks had been cleared. Two plates with something lavish and complicated-looking on them were flanked by gleaming silverware, along with a bottle of something sitting in a bucket of ice.
"I've been swallowing my pride all day," Jaina muttered. "I'm not hungry."
Jag shrugged.
"Well, I am. Do you know what time it is?"
"I've been a bit busy."
"I know. That's why I thought you might want something to eat. You tend to forget to fuel yourself when you're in full-on charge mode."
He rose from the bed where he'd been lying, went to her, gently pressed her into a chair, and tugged off her boots. She was so distressed by the events of the day, she let him.
"Come on, eat something, and tell me what happened. I saw the Hollow News, of course, but something tells me that Javis Tyr might not be reporting the entire story."
Despite her disgruntlement, the aroma of the robusteak was appetizing, and Jaina found herself digging in as she told him about what had happened. Jag listened quietly, his eyes intent on her, offering silent support.
"I never mentioned you, Tahiri, Winter, or Mirax," she said. "I was forced to reveal Tekli, but I honestly think that was a good thing. You know how agitated she can get. I think it was kind of a relief for her."
"I agree. And thank you. I knew you wouldn't."
She gave him a fleeting smile that turned into a real one, reached across the table and laid a hand on his. He squeezed it tightly.
"Everyone who matters knows exactly what the situation is," he told her. "Up to and including Master Hamner. I'd go so far as to say even Dala understands, but it's contrary to what she wants, and frankly what I think she believes to be a positive thing. Your actions helped the Jedi retain two very valuable study subjects, and that might be what solves the whole problem."
"Hey, you think my double could stand in for me here?"
Jaina said, making a feeble and somewhat wistful joke.
"She's good, but her mouth is all wrong. I don't think she'd fool Jedi,"
Jag said, looking completely serious. Jaina actually laughed. They finished the meal in good spirits and shared a deliciously gooey dessert. Jag leaned back and lifted the sparkling wine from the ice.
"And now, to celebrate," he said.
"This day?"
Jaina wrinkled her nose.
"I think it needs to be buried, not celebrated."
"So far, I would agree with you. But I have something to suggest that will, I certainly hope, let this hitherto horrible day end on a very positive note."
He poured the wine into two fluted glasses. Jaina accepted, looking at the amber liquid with the small bubbles for a moment, then turning her attention to Jag.
"This better not be about the Moffs, the GA, or the Empire," she said.
"Well, then I must disappoint, because this is most assuredly about the Empire. Specifically about the head of said Empire, and a joint venture he is suggesting. I think that a formal alliance between two key factions would be a wise idea at this juncture. Both parties would benefit."
He turned to her expectantly. Jaina peered at him. She couldn't fathom what in the galaxy he was talking about. He had a very odd look on his face, too, though he was trying hard to keep his expression composed.
"Have you been in negotiations with some world I've not heard about? Or are you trying to push that whole rival Jedi school thing on me again?"
He blinked. A smile curved his lips, then became a chuckle.
"Jaina Solo," he said, warmth lacing his voice. "I'm asking you to marry me."
Her mouth dropped open.
How would this possibly work?"
It was not a romantic response, but it was from her heart, and Jag knew her well enough to know that. Still holding the celebratory wine, of which neither had yet partaken, Jag replied,
"You'll continue exactly as you have, of course, and so will I. Eventually, I am certain the Jedi will determine exactly what's going on with Valen, Gisela, and the others. Once a treatment is found, Dala will be severely defanged. Luke will still be gone, but this whole rather grotesque sideshow will be over. I am also certain that Luke will return sooner rather than later, with enough information on what happened with Jason to get his sentence turned over. Once he accomplishes that, public sentiment will swing back toward the Jedi. As for the Moffs, he said, frowning a little, they may think I'm a fool for love, but I actually have some very solid leads on who the troublemakers behind the scenes are. He leaned forward, looking into her eyes. Jaina, I love you for who you are. I have for a long time. I have absolutely no desire to curtail, impede, cripple, modify, or thwart you in any way. There is my detailed argument for this formal union. What do you think of the proposition? Jaina was still reeling. It was all so well thought out, so precise, so JAG. But beneath the military bearing and that clipped, logical, formal presentation of a proposal of marriage, she knew that Jagged Fell was deeply in love with her. He was even nervous, she knew, as he waited on her reply. So she gave it to him. She sprang into his arms with such vigor that the chair fell over. But neither of them particularly seemed to mind.
Chapter 22. Aboard the Jade Shadow.
Luke had been encouraged by how well he and Ben had been getting along through most of this odyssey they had embarked on. There had been some friction and some arguing, but by and large they had been growing closer. Now, as he had feared ever since Silgall had suggested they travel to the Yangtze, the issue of flow walking had divided them. Luke had to struggle against the desire to protest, to try to stop Ben every time he went off with Tadar Ro. He had hoped that by biting his tongue he would encourage Ben to volunteer information about how the training went, but Ben remained silent, almost angry. So it was no surprise initially when Luke's dreams were chaotic and oppressive, as if he were coming under physical attack. And then, a fraction of an instant later, he realized it was no dream. Luke sprang up, fully awake immediately, executing a somersault over the length of the bed as he summoned his lightsaber to him. By its light, he saw his attacker strike where he had been sleeping with a strange metal rod, then whirl angrily to charge. He couldn't sense anything from the Yangtze who was so bent on causing him harm. It was as if the being were still a dream, as if it didn't exist in the Force at all. The Yangtze was startlingly fast for someone who appeared to be carved out of stone, and Luke's lightsaber was a blur as he blocked the attacks from the metal stick. Then, before he realized what was happening, the intruder was gone. He ran out the open hatch, lightsaber aglow, but there was no sign of his attacker. Ben ran to join him, his lightsaber lit too, his hair mussed, but his face alert and calm.
"Who was that? How'd they get in? And why were they attacking us?"
Luke shook his head. "I don't know who it was. He or she was completely absent in the Force, and I haven't spent enough time with any Yangtze other than Tadar Ro to distinguish individual differences in such a brief encounter. As for how they got in, they are masterful Force users,